Welcome everybody to Gita Nagari. There's, besides not everybody's here yet, there's something else that's missing. There's supposed to be words to the song that Srila Prabhupada wrote at the Boston Harbor. And somebody was printing 170 copies, and I don't see the devotee. Shankadari? Is anybody around? His wife in the kitchen, or you check? How many are here in Gita Nagari for the first time? Welcome. This is part two of a seminar on empathic communication. I'm stalling for time a little bit because I want to have the words to the song we're going to hear. We could read it together as well as hear it. So the empathic communication seminar part two is a follow-up of part one, which we did last year. And what the inspiration for it was my understanding of here in Gita Nagari, there were a few gatherings of different student groups, etc. And there was a lot of interest in the student groups for nonviolent communication. A little background on that. Several decades worth of work by a gentleman in Southwest USA named Marshall Rosenberg, who was a little bit ahead of his time in terms of this skill. Nonviolent communication is a Western term of what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, austerity of speech. Chapter 17, text 15, you can look it up later. But he took that topic, not like he was in disciplic succession or anything, but he took that topic and expanded on that topic of our modern times, communication is harsh and violent and demeaning and demoralizing and, you know, other adverbs. So there's a way to speak the truth pleasingly or palatably, or besides just speaking honestly. So speaking in a way that there's austerity of speech. So Dear Krishna Maharaj studied that for quite some time, and he did so because he felt it was important for our devotee community. I'm sure he'll say some of these similar things tomorrow himself, but on his behalf, especially for our new people. He Krishnaized everything. And then he taught seminars and he wrote a book, and so I invited him to come and we did part one. And the response was really strong. So I asked him, is there a part two? And he said, sure. So he's here for part two, and I'm like a cheerleader on the sidelines going, rah, rah. And so this evening looks like we're not going to have the words for the song, but Srila Prabhupada is the photograph of Srila Prabhupada at the Boston Harbor. When he arrived and he wrote this Markine Bhagavata Dharma prayer to Krishna. Markine, I'm not sure exactly the meaning, but it has something to do with teaching, sharing. He came to give Krishna consciousness, Markine Bhagavata Dharma. And there's a recording of some devotees singing it, so we'll hear the recording. The words are embedded in the song, right, in the slides that you'll see. And unfortunately, well, you'll have the text, you can see it when we get it, and then you can go over it again if you like. I heard Srila Prabhupada in a lecture. He knew it by heart, you know, as they say. He not only wrote it once upon a time, but he carried that message with him. He knew the words of the song. He knew the message he wanted to convey, and it's an epitome of empathic communication. He understands the people. He cares about the people. He's putting Krishna at the center completely, dependent upon Krishna to fulfill the purpose for which Krishna brought him. And this is before he even began his mission, but it's the contemplation. So let's see if it works. Let's do something with the sound. I have a homework question. How many of you did your homework? How many of you read the book that Deer Krishna Maharaj wrote? Those of you that registered were requested to get a copy and read it over before coming here. Okay. Thank you for your honesty. The attempt that's going to follow next is outlining two things, some of the main themes found in Veer Krishnamurti's book on empathic communication. And then the second is illustrating how our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada is the Acharya of empathic communication. This song includes the elements, but now we're going to go through some of the elements, the main elements, not everything. So the need for empathic communication, this is from Prabhupada's writing, Nectar of Instruction, text 4. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. The life of the Krishna Conscious Society is nourished by these six types of loving exchanges. Well, when Prabhupada was coming to America and on the Jaladuta looking at the Boston Harbor, he knew he had a mission, and so through the instrument of that mission was ISKCON. And The intentions are these six types of loving exchanges amongst the members. So that's Prabhupada's own words. Now, very simple definition of empathy. So this is empathic communication. So empathy refers to a state of consciousness where we connect by being personally present and fully aware of another person's feelings and needs. Empathy. You connect with the person in an awareness, fully aware of their feelings and needs. As we experience a deep connection with Krishna, this empathic nature comes out. And we're on the path to try to become Krishna conscious. So the connection of what this is giving some clarity to what that empathic nature that's inherently within us, that Krishna consciousness has an element, is empathy. Compassion is a very similar word, but empathy has a very specific word, empathic. Prabhupada signed all of his letters, "Your ever well wisher." And he meant it. There were some examples where devotees asked Prabhupada, "What was the intention behind your using that phrase? When you say your ever well wisher, what did you mean to convey by that?" And he said different things. One of them was his commitment to us, his disciples. Specifically, he said, in relation to one, "Even someone may go away. I won't break my commitment to that person. I'll remain your ever well-wisher." And then in another circumstance, Prabhupada said, "It means your best friend, and your best friend is Krishna. And the best friend close to Krishna reminds you that Krishna is your best friend." "That's my intention, ever well-wisher, to remind you that Krishna is your dear most friend." Just a dear friend is one who always reminds you of Krishna. And Krishna is your dear most friend. Here is Srila Prabhupada surrounded by persons that don't have the culture that he has, but wishing to transmit, convey, share that culture with them. So this is just kind of like a introductory statement to the whole, this evening's talk. Srila Prabhupada, our acharya, is our acharya who epitomizes empathy. An unlimited ocean of compassion, he was our eternal guide, well-wisher, and spiritual master. He descended to this world to manifest the compassion of the Supreme Lord by delivering the souls of this fallen age to the spiritual realm. Listen to his recordings, the recordings of his speaking, and this is a very nice capsulization of it. Comes out again and again and again, the mission of our founder Acharya. A person who is unable to bear another's distress is called compassionate, directly Prabhupada's words, and an epitome of compassion and empathy. A little dictionary definition. We gave a definition of empathy already. Here's compassion is feelings for others. So our message here is it's not just an emotion or something theoretical. It's emotion that pulls one to act. So there's another way of saying the same. There's a cognitive element, something that you know about someone else. There's a feeling element, something that you feel about that person who you know something about, and a motivational element, you want to do something. So, cognitive, affective feelings, and motivational, you want to do something. That's compassion. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that the essence of all forms of religion is compassion, jiva-daya, toward the living beings and the chanting of Krishna's names, or names of God. In all religions, names of God are there. So, calling God's names and feeling compassion for living entities. The essence. And Prabhupada made sacrifices of his own convenience or comfort to just give that and give that under any condition or circumstance. Here's a little recording of one devotee who was experiencing being with Prabhupada when he had a heart attack.
And I think that his stroke was a very traumatic experience. Dharani and I were perched by the window looking in to the room. There was a window between his living room and his bedroom. You know, it was that arch window in New York. And he was very weak, and still he would have the boys, Satsarup, or Brahmananda, or whoever was there, they would take turns. They would sit him up and open the Bhagavatam, and he would continue teaching and continue reading the story of Prahlad Maharaj. Even though he was, I mean, I'm saying he was apparently suffering, or he was apparently at a very critical time hovering between life and death, he didn't care for that. All he cared about was, he only cared about teaching us. And I never saw such selfless love. I was deeply affected at that moment. I realized a lot of things. I saw really pure love. I saw how much he loved us. And I realized that he wouldn't be with us very long. And I made a vow that I would do everything I could to take care of him and help him and do whatever I could to make things easier for him.
Can we get the portable microphone ready? Because there's going to be another one of these. This is a little distracting. So he gave his whole life, energy, to the purpose that he expressed at the Boston Harbor. That the exhibition of compassion, it was being the carrier of his spiritual master's order, but it wasn't just duty, it was the love of the living entities and their suffering condition, wishing them to be with Krishna. And doing whatever he could do according to the indication and empowerment that Krishna gave him to do that with whatever strength, ability, and everything he had. And that was his life. But no one knows where compassion should be applied. Compassion for the dress of a drowning man is senseless. A man fallen in the ocean of nations cannot be saved simply by rescuing his outward dress, the gross material body. That is to say, the compassion that Prabhupada was dealing with was fundamentally, primarily upon the soul, But it's not that he ignored. There's the holistic picture of the living entity. He was concerned about material suffering. It should be understood that sages, saintly persons and devotees are not unconcerned with the people's welfare. Actual devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy, both materially and spiritually. This is directly from his Bhagavatam purports. And there's many examples of this we'll see as we go along. For as far as material suffering is concerned, in Mayapur, when Srila Prabhupada saw children fighting with dogs for the remnants of prasadam, he cried. He immediately gave orders that no one within 10-mile radius of the temple was to go hungry. It was one of his morning walk episodes where there was off in the corner there was a prasadam hall, and the arrangement was devotees would go take prasadam in the prasadam hall, and what was left from the leaf plates was put somewhere, and the dogs would come and lick the leaf plates out just outside. And then the children were also hungry and they were fighting with the dogs over what was on the leaf plates. That was the situation. It was early morning and Prabhupada saw it immediately. So then a memo went out to all the centers like this. But from that time, the same pavilion that was serving the devotees, prasadam, that was what it was built for, became also a food for life facility, and all the local village people were invited to come and take free prasadam. His heart was very soft seeing this. Now these are big letter banners. These are messages from Dear Krishnamurti's book, and the attempt here is to review them and indicate or illustrate how Srila Prabhupada was an acharya in each of these categories. Seeing Krishna behind everything. Real spiritual compassion requires seeing Krishna behind everything, because Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Lord. Directly from Prabhupada's writings. Seeing everything as Krishna's arrangement. A devotee understands that whatever happens is for his own benefit. Developing this frame of mind helps him develop tolerance, which is a prerequisite for compassion. When you extend yourself to others, mode of goodness says there's an expectation, and transcendence says there's no expectation. And the mode of goodness, if the expectation isn't met, then there's a frustration. But in transcendence, if there's no expectation, then it's unlimited tolerance. You don't serve for the purpose of for getting something and getting something back. You serve because you want to serve. Srila Prabhupada exhibited his faith in Krishna in this way. His mission was to please Krishna. And the indication of how Krishna would be pleased was through his spiritual master, and so that was his life and soul. Here's an example of Prabhupada seeing Krishna behind everything. The next day, two men were visiting Prabhupada and they asked, "Why didn't you cover the windows? Weren't you afraid of being bombed?" This is a bombing situation in Calcutta. Prabhupada said, "It's not under our control. If Krishna wants to kill, who can save? And if Krishna wants to save, who can kill? If I should see the bomb coming overhead..." Prabhupada looked wide-eyed and thrusting his arms toward the sky, then I will see the Baal as Krishna. He continued to look up, his arms spread wide open. I will see the Baal as Krishna. I don't know if we can do that. But because he could do that, it wasn't cute, it was his consciousness. Therefore his compassion was without limits. And thus tolerance of circumstances was without limits. Tolerance is to be able to feel and express compassion. To be able to feel and express compassion, tolerance is essential. Here are some examples, or a few. This is Bir Krishnamaraj, I believe it's directly from his book. One of the reasons for Srila Prabhupada's success is that he was truly tolerant. Can you imagine the degree of tolerance he had in Vrindavan? He was at home, surrounded by Vaishnavas, but in America, he was living with people who were unclean and engaged in abominable activities. Srila Prabhupada was so successful because as a Nitya Siddha Bhagavata, Mahabhagavata, he was immersed in love for Krishna. And all Krishna's parts and parcels, the living entities, Prabhupada loved us as a mother loves her children. So, some mothers are not very tolerant, but most mothers I've observed are amazingly tolerant. Little children do this and that, and they just smile. Now, Prabhupada knew when to be strong. He also knew when to be very tolerant. And one of the reasons to not be so tolerant is when people would offend or blaspheme a Vaishnav. The tolerance of a Vaishnav does not mean that he tolerates blasphemy of Krishna or his devotees or physical violence. This intolerance is actually spiritual because it's out of love rather than frustrated lust. Here's from Nectar of Instruction. The point is that one should be ready to tolerate all insults to one's own self, but when Krishna or his pure devotee is blasphemed, a genuine devotee becomes angry and acts like fire against the offenders. So we need to know when to apply anger and when to apply tolerance. These are points, again just summarizing, these are elements of empathic communication found in Bir Krishnamaraj's book. And we're pointing out what those, you know, kind of banner headlines are and illustrating Srila Prabhupada as the acharya of these elements of empathic communication. By seeing living entities as Krishna's parts and parcels, one can then be very tolerant and loving. These are some very nice examples. This is Komadaki, nice devotee, with the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. She was serving Prabhupada that way. One of his sannyasis had become involved with a woman, and so Prabhupada announced that he was going to marry them. And everyone was surprised, because we didn't know that that could happen. Prabhupada gave a talk about Krishna consciousness, and he initiated the woman, and then he married them. He made it clear that he was caring for us. And he was keeping us engaged in Krishna's service. He didn't want us to go away. He didn't want us to give up. If we couldn't serve him in this capacity, then he wanted to serve us to serve in whatever capacity we could. It was so kind and fatherly of Srila Prabhupada, the way he treated the whole situation. Then it continues that sannyasi was saying to Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya rejected one of his followers just for looking at a woman lustfully. And yet I have given up sannyas and I've gotten married. So does that mean that you reject me? Srila Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he can reject like that. But I'm only his humble servant, and you are helping me, so I can never reject you. There's many such examples. I mean, not the sannyasi getting married kind of examples, but persons having spiritual difficulty and Prabhupada continuing to extend compassion. It's easy to talk Prabhupada stories, but I want to finish the presentation here. He was non-judgmental. Here's another interesting one. You know, this is from Prabhupada memories. This is Sorup, who also worked with the BBT. A devotee named Yamunacharya was there, and he didn't want to come inside and sit down. He was feeling very low and fallen because that morning he had snuck a cigarette. He didn't feel worthy of joining his godbrothers and sisters and just wanted to stand outside the door and listen. Srila Prabhupada asked, what was the cause of the commotion? And somebody told him that Yamunacharya didn't want to come in because he felt unworthy and too sinful. Prabhupada laughed and called to him saying, whatever you have done, I forgive you. Now come inside and join us. Here's another Guru Das story. It's important to avoid thinking that those who satisfy my senses are friends and those who do not satisfy senses are enemies. If we think in terms of friends and enemies, only certain people will be objects of our empathy and others will not. When someone does some service, I encourage him, but I love my students equally. You are all my children, my sons and daughters. Prabhupada didn't, I mean, he heaped appreciation on those that did something very nicely. But it's not when he was heaping appreciation on those that were doing something nicely. He didn't appreciate the service of others equally so. From the Bhagavatam purport, the words so hridam, or friendliness, is very significant in this verse. People are generally ignorant of Krishna consciousness, and therefore, to become their best well-wisher, one should teach them about Krishna consciousness without discrimination. Meaning, I'll teach this one, but I won't teach that one. And we certainly discriminate about how to convey in an appropriate manner Krishna's message. But this discrimination is in the pejorative sense, that I'll give to some and not to others. I'll be kind to some and not to others. Now, Prabhupada was expert at understanding how to deliver, and he was also expert at understanding how to admonish when needed. A Vaishnava has no personal troubles, but he is unhappy to see others in trouble. So this is similar to this Markine Bhagavad Dharma song. He was fine. But the people that he had to deliver Krishna's message to, so much, Rajas and Tamas, how are they going to understand? When I think of how everyone in the world is suffering, it makes me cry. I actually cry. Now, I didn't go around boo-hoo, you know, but he went around giving Krishna's message. But he saw the suffering and the difficulty he felt inside, that emotion he felt inside was genuine, moved his heart. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that in order to make devotees, we have to shed gallons of blood. And he gave this very strange instruction. If they want meat, feed them meat, but give them Krishna consciousness. This was a demonstration of his tolerance, an example that we don't follow literally. His mood was to do whatever is necessary to bring people to Krishna consciousness and to tolerate their bad habits along the way. Srila Prabhupada also exhibited this topmost manifestation of empathy and tolerance. So, again, this evening is having us turn our attention to our founder Acharya as our role model or teacher by example, a one who exhibited these qualities. And as we become more educated in what these qualities are, we can look to Prabhupada even more in a shelter-taking way, because he was shelter-giving like anything. Giving Krishna and removing our shortcomings and obstacles and everything. Remember hearing when Prabhupada, I heard Prabhupada say this, someone had gone away and some time passed and they came back. And when they came back, they were ashamed and they expressed their sorrow and their regret and their feelings. And they were describing how they were struggling, and that's why they left. And Prabhupada said, "Don't you know with one kick of my boot I can take away all those troubles?" And the room went, "Jai Prabhupada." Person felt protected. From Bhaktivedanta Purport, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. Prahlad Maharaj said, now this is Prabhupada's purport, "My Lord, I have no personal problems, for I have learned how to glorify your transcendental qualities and thus enter a trance of ecstasy. I do have a problem, however, for I am simply thinking of these rascals and fools who are busy with maya sukha, temporary happiness, without knowledge of devotional service unto you. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnav, because a Vaishnav fully takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he personally has no problems. But because he is compassionate towards the fallen, conditioned souls, he is always thinking of plans to save them from their hellish life in this body and in the next. Our duty, the duty of all sane men, is to save them." Now we're going to need the recording again. This is another memory. I believe this was recorded at 26 Second Avenue.
Another day, famous person, famous prophet, Sanskrit scholar, a gentleman coming in. He wrote a book about Krishna. quota. The dust raised by the hooves of the cows refers to this, and the gopis are symbolic of that, and of course everything pertains. Mind, body, the real substance. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have been looking at your book. And the man looked at big Sanskrit, big Sanskrit scholar. It took me 12 years to write that book. Prabhupada said, yes, there are still mistakes in it. He said, you have described things here, but the proof of whether one truly understood Krishna is like these young boys and girls. This is the age for enjoyment, but they have given this up to perform devotional service. Paragraph starts chuckling away. I spoke, I drink, I can give these things up if I want to, but I don't want to. Sure, Pop, yes. Therefore, you have many, many ways to go in the spirit of time. And he said, well, it's time to go now, and he left. But before he left, the Prabhupada presented him with a copy of Nectar Devotion. And said, I will request you to please look through this book. I think you will find it of great interest. And afterwards, whenever these things would happen, the devotees will gather around Prabhupada for the after-game wrap-up. I want to make sure that we really understood this is a really big demon. Let's get the nectar here. And Prabhupada was very quiet. So one of us jumped in, myself, Sadhguru Maharaj, Shantideva was there, Guru Gauranga. And I think Guru Gauranga said, he was a big demon, wasn't he, Prabhupada? I said, well, he has been influenced by association with my bodies. But I've noticed in his book he has said the name Krishna many times. This will greatly benefit him. So compassionate, so kind, so concerned, even for this mind-body scholar who had been doing so much damage to his writing. And then this person sees Srila Prabhupada, a very humble man, came in, Srila Prabhupada looked at it, perhaps anticipating some more debate. And Prabhupada said, do you have any questions? And the man said, no, I was just very happy to hear that you were coming to Geneva, and I was honored by an opportunity to come and meet you personally. Through the Prabhupada thought for a second and said, Yogeshwar, bring my harmonium. Sadhguru, you play cards. Hansaduva, play Mridanga. Hari, Hari, Bifale. Bhajan for a few minutes. The man stood up, thanked Srila Prabhupada, and left. Srila Prabhupada looked at us and said, here's a very simple soul. Therefore, I sang for him, because I knew he would appreciate it. He had this wonderful facility for reciprocating with people, just according to their needs and disposition. And I think the wonderful thing, one of the many wonderful things that I recall about Srila Prabhupada, was when I was with him, it was always this wonderful, inspiring example of someone in every moment, every situation, every day, giving Krishna, giving Krishna, giving Krishna. And that kind of a memory is a sacred trust to us. We pass it along to you as the inheritance that we have from Srila Prabhupada, our gift to you. And please derive as much inspiration, satisfaction from this as we have. And thank you all for being here. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
If you remember back the definition of empathy, it's being present and having some appreciation of the feelings and the concerns of another person. So these little examples showed that Prabhupada was moment to moment present with whoever he was with and giving Krishna in a way that Krishna inspired him was appropriate for that person. Very flexible, very personal, very connected with whoever he was with. Here's another.
I was taken down with a severe case of jaundice. So somehow Srila Prabhupada noticed that I was missing, and I was later told he had inquired many times where I was. One day, I became aware of the door being opened and turned to see Prabhupada's lotus feet walking into that closet room. I offered my obeisances as best as I could, and by then, he's leaning down, all the while chanting the Ram Mantra. Then he placed his hand on my head and inquired, "Yamuna, how are you doing?" First thing I said, "I'm always thinking of you, Shri Bhagavan." Then I told him my symptoms and he said, "I think this is jaundice. Now I will take charge of your recovery. You will never get well in these conditions on the floor." Srila Prabhupada, the hospital bed, brought him for me and moved me into a room right next to his, with floor-to-ceiling windows, neat trees outside, and fan. And I remember being propped up in this bed, and he came in every day to check on my progress. He also called in an Ayurvedic doctor and gave me a diet for jaundice. He said, "I had to take something called Bika." Srila Prabhupada said, "This is your medicine, and you have to eat it every day, and you also have to drink sugarcane juice." So I remember the first time I took a bite of Bika, it tasted like the most bitter, horrible thing because of the jaundice. Srila Prabhupada would personally stand and watch me eat the Bika, feeling miserable because of the taste. And he would actually smile and chuckle about that. I was feeling great bliss and happiness, that bliss and care and unfathomable kindness of Srila Prabhupada. He was so engaged, so busy preaching to tens of thousands of people and taking care of our entire society. Yet he personally took charge of my recovery. To this day, I become emotional just remembering this. It only increased my dedication to see that this small, insignificant soul, Yamuna, was so cared for and nurtured that she had.
There's so many narrations of events like this, so selecting some is a little difficult because there's so many. But the message, in essence, is the total compassion that Prabhupada felt and expressed towards, certainly towards his devotees, but we'll see towards everyone also. And this holistic dimension of his compassion went beyond the soul to, as we saw just with this case with Jamuna, to the body, and in the case of Jamunacharya to his mind. But it wasn't circumstantially created. Empathy is expressed with every aspect of one's being. Here's a nice example. Srila Prabhupada, however, in spite of overseeing the spiritual life of thousands of disciples all over the world, looked and waved at us. We were suddenly so overwhelmed by his glance and simple gesture. He was a Paramahansa, constantly absorbed in loving devotion to Krishna, who took the time to personally acknowledge the presence of a few young aspiring devotees. Srila Prabhupada is so personal and merciful. The image of Krishna's pure devotee waving at us for a few precious seconds has left a deep, permanent impression on my mind and my life. After 26 years, I can still relive in a minute, in the minute details. So what to speak of somebody like Jamuna that had such ongoing, again and again and again and again and again and again reciprocation. But the power of a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada is such that even a few seconds leaves an indelible impression. But that, you know, that, what was that impression? It was the Krishna conscious seeing and feeling and connecting appropriate to the person. And here are some examples of Srila Prabhupada being a good listener. This is one of the symptoms of empathic communication, is the ability to hear others. And here's three recollections from Vishakha. We'll see her picture next. During the Pandals in India, sometimes notable personalities like the mayor of Delhi or the Canadian High Commissioner would speak to the audience to introduce Srila Prabhupada. Although it appeared that Srila Prabhupada wasn't listening during those talks, afterwards, when Srila Prabhupada spoke, he would respond point by point to what the person had said. When devotees invited guests to speak with Srila Prabhupada, he would often ask them about their understanding of yoga or theology or whatever subject they were interested in or specializing in. Prabhupada would listen carefully to what they responded and then add the Krishna conscious perspective to theirs. Look at Srila Prabhupada listening very attentively to this guest. Vishakha writes, "When I personally asked him a philosophical question, he had his eyes closed while answering and responded with a profound yet easily understood answer that was very satisfying." Another element, we're going to finish quickly or shortly. Empathic communication nurtures voluntary love. That is to say, without carrots and sticks, rewards and punishments. Just by the nature of the communication, it invites loving reciprocation. Prabhupada, a very famous letter. Krandar was a temple president in Los Angeles, leading many, it was his Western world headquarters in Los Angeles. So Prabhupada wrote to Krandar, "Our leaders shall be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual, spontaneous, and voluntary." I'll read it again. "Our leaders shall be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. They should try always to generate some atmosphere of fresh challenge to the devotees, so that they will agree enthusiastically to rise and meet it." That is the art of management. To draw out spontaneous loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. Krishna consciousness movement must be always a challenge, a great achievement to be gained by voluntary desire to do it, and that will keep it healthy. And Prabhupada epitomized, he not only instructed like that, he was so expert. And he gave appreciation for someone's efforts. He inspired it, and once they did it, he would appreciate it, and then he would give them something further to do. Here's some examples. I heard about your Rath Yatra. I was happy to hear about it. Please go on and on doing this to fulfill my desire that I had for many years. Another, I'm feeling very intensely your separation. In 1966, you joined me in San Francisco. You were the first man to give some contribution for printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you rendered some favorable services to Krishna in different ways. Very specific about that you're a nice devotee, Haribol Prabhu, but very specific about the sacrifices that they made. I thank you very much for installing Radha Giri Dari. From my childhood, I was very fond of Radha Krishna. My good disciples are helping me to open many Krishna temples all over the world. One by one by one, and giving encouragement. Then here's a really nice and kind of humorous section. Not just to his disciples or devotees, but to all living entities. Speaking generally about, this is from a purport of Bhagavatam. He is not only a well-wisher of human society, but a well-wisher of animal society as well. The devotee of the Lord is merciful to everyone. The dogs, cats, trees, etc. He treats all living entities in such a way that they can ultimately get salvation from this material entanglement. The sadhu engages in the highest philanthropic activities for the benediction of living entities, even monkeys and tigers. All right, let them come in. After all, it is God's property. That is the Krishna conscious system. If an animal, say a monkey, comes to your garden to eat, don't prohibit him. He is also part and parcel of Krishna. If you prohibit him, where will he eat? This Krishna culture is practical. They are part and parcel of God. Give them food. They'll not create any disturbance. Everyone has an obligation to feed whoever is hungry, even if it's a tiger. I don't know how you do that. Here's my arm. Go ahead. Prabhupada elaborating, my father's elder brother was running a cloth shop. Before closing the shop, my uncle would put out a basin filled with rice. Of course, as in any village, there were rats. But the rats would take the rice and not cut even a single cloth. Cloth is very costly. Even if one cloth has been cut by a rat, then it would have been a great loss. So with a few pennies worth of rice, he saved many dollars worth of cloth. This Krishna culture is practical. They are also part and parcel of God. Give them food. They'll not create any disturbance. Give them food. Everyone has an obligation to feed whoever is hungry, even if it is a tiger. Once a certain spiritual teacher was living in the jungle. His disciples knew the tigers will never come and disturb us because our teacher keeps some milk a little distant from the ashram and the tigers come, drink, and go away. Very practical. This is another. Prabhupada pointed to his coffee table and said, do you see this ant? I looked carefully. I knew that Srila Prabhupada was the external representative of Supersoul, and if he said that there was an ant, then there was an ant. But there was no ant. I didn't want to say no and appear stupid to not see the spiritual or whatever ant it was that was there. And I didn't want to say yes and be proven a liar because I couldn't see the ant. Srila Prabhupada looked at me intensely as though the ant issue was now solved. He wanted to get on to real business. He said, my job is to understand what is my duty to this ant. Not only was there an ant, but I couldn't see, but now I had a duty to do. Prabhupada looked at me almost beseechingly. Somehow, I have to help this ant. Maybe I can chant Hare Krishna to it or feed it a little prasadam. If we can help one ant become Krishna conscious, then our whole movement is a glorious success. Just see how Prabhupada is taking... There's not even an ant on the table, and he's taking it as an opportunity to give instruction about compassion. And now at the final section, we're going to need, I think, this microphone, because that one doesn't work as well. Take this microphone over there. This is a recording of some statements of Srila Prabhupada illustrating compassion. Go ahead.
कारुणिका सुहृद सर्वदेहिनां अजातशत्रव शान्ताः साधव साधुभूषणाः. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. His concern, therefore, is to enlighten people in devotional service to the Lord. That is His mercy. He knows that without devotional service to the Lord, human life is void. A devotee travels all over the country from door to door preaching. Be Krishna conscious. Be a devotee of Lord Krishna. Don't spoil your life in simply fulfilling your animal propensities. Human life is meant for self-realization or Krishna consciousness. These are the preachings of a sadhu. He is not satisfied with his own liberation. He always thinks about others. He is the most compassionate personality towards all the fallen souls. One of his qualifications, therefore, is Karunika, great mercy to the fallen souls. While engaged in preaching work, he has to meet with so many opposing elements, and therefore the sadhu or devotee of the Lord has to be very tolerant. Someone may ill-treat him because the conditioned souls are not prepared to receive the transcendental knowledge of devotional service. They do not like it. That is their disease. The sadhu has the thankless task of impressing upon them the importance of devotional service. Sometimes devotees are personally attacked with violence, but still they are tolerant because their mission is to deliver the fallen souls. One of the qualifications of a sadhu is that he is very tolerant and is merciful to all fallen souls. He is merciful because he is the well-wisher of all living entities. A person in Krishna consciousness A devotee of the Lord is always compassionate. He is not satisfied that only he himself is a devotee, but he tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. There are many devotees of the Lord who face many risks in distributing the devotional service of the Lord to people in general. That should be done. Yastu sarvani bhutani atman evanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato na vijugupsate. He who sees systematically everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as the spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. The self-effulgent Vaikuntha planets, by whose illumination alone all the illuminating planets within this material world give off reflected light, cannot be reached by those who are not merciful to other living entities. Only persons who constantly engage in welfare activities for other living entities can reach the Vaikuntha planets. The second class devotee is he who is merciful and compassionate to the fallen soul. As long as one is not compassionate to people in general in his devotional service to the Lord, he is a third class devotee. The first class devotee gives assurance to every living being that there is no need to fear in this material existence. Let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nations of material existence. Pure devotees, out of compassion for the fallen souls, are kripalu, very kind to people in general. They distribute this Bhagavata knowledge all over the world. A kind-hearted devotee is called Dinanatha, protector of the poor, ignorant mass of the people. Lord Krishna is also known as Dinanatha or Dinabandhu, the master, the actual friend of the poor living entities, and his pure devotee also takes the same position of Dinanatha. A Vaishnava is so liberal that he is prepared to risk everything to rescue the conditioned souls from material existence. As such, if we concentrate our loving propensities upon Krishna only, then immediately universal love, unity and tranquility will be automatically realized. But our actual identity should be, I am Krishna's. Whenever we think in this way, we are thinking in Krishna consciousness. Only in this way can universal love among all living entities be established. But a devotee, a pure lover of God, he loves everyone, just like we are. A devotee who performs even a slight amount of devotional service is a friend to everyone. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Since the Lord is the well-wisher of every living entity, and since a devotee assumes the qualities of the Lord, a devotee also acts for everyone's good fortune by performing devotional service. A Vaishnava is always a well-wisher to everyone. A Vaishnava must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the home of a chandala, a Vaishnava never refuses to act for everyone's welfare. Not only is a sadhu everyone's well-wisher, but he is not an enemy of anyone. He is also shanta, peaceful. I write at the end of my letters to my disciples, your ever well-wisher. And as such, I cannot become otherwise than being ever well-wisher of my disciples, even though he may leave me.
Lights? Someone can hit the light switch. It's 8 o'clock. Can you hit the mute button? Okay, we're good. So I didn't anticipate questions. Maybe some appreciation, but our schedule is at 8 o'clock we're going to have kirtan. So whoever's scheduled for kirtan, please get yourself ready. Who's on the schedule? You're on the schedule. Okay. So do we need any little housekeeping announcements from our organizers?